This is The Topic is Trek, episode 67 for Friday, May 29th, 2020. Coming up in this episode, the worst kept secret has the worst possible timing for us. Simon Pegg has some thoughts, and there are cosmic clouds on the horizon. All that and more right now on The Topic is Trek. The Tribble with Strange New Worlds. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already. Oh, we were going to actually do our show, but we got scrubbed till Saturday because of poor weather at the Cape. Welcome to The Topic is Trek. I'm Clinton, one of your co-hosts, and beaming in to join me as always, first of all, Mr. Craig Stepp.
Hey.
Boy, you're still working on those catchphrases, but I think that one's taken already. So
the Fonz.
Yeah, try again.
Okay.
And Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
Hello, ugly bags of mostly water.
I think I've heard that one before too.
Wrong franchise.
What?
No, that's the right franchise. That's the right franchise.
What? Great.
No,
kick him out.
I was thinking about the fact, why did I do the Shatner impersonation for something that had to do with Strange New Worlds, which is Pike? And I realized that's because I just this afternoon watched the episode of Legends of Tomorrow where they're in the TV episode where they're doing Star Trek and, you know, Sarah is doing this really over-the-top Shatner impression. So it's like a very, very, I don't know, did you guys get a chance to see that one?
I have not yet. I was curious to see what you thought.
Well, I don't watch Legends of Tomorrow, so it was hard to follow a lot of the plot going on. So I was watching it more for the bits than anything like that.
Sure.
There, I don't want to spoil it for you because there's something that happens very early on, and I was laughing and laughing and laughing. And I think if people don't get it, they just don't get it. So we'll have to discuss this next episode if you had a chance to watch it.
All right. I'll make sure to watch it then.
Okay. So that's why I was doing my over the top Shatner impression there.
Oh, that's what that was.
I don't do impressions. You know, I barely make an impression, let alone do any. So
this whole coronavirus,
it makes sense now.
Coronavirus thing's been tough on us all.
I know.
It certainly has.
Yeah.
And I had to be up at 4:30 in the afternoon to wait for that launch, and they scrubbed it. So
am I right?
You should come over here. Goodness. It's on earlier.
Exactly. That's how that works. All right. Well, all that said, it's time to begin the show. We're going to open up our subspace chatter. Right, Charlie?
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
You are in error.
Now, am I in error or is Charlie in error?
Charlie's in error.
Oh, okay. All right.
I think Nomad is a good follow-up to that.
Well, we'll actually be talking a bit about Nomad kind of in a way a little bit later on this evening. But let's start off with a story that Chuck is going to tell us about the worst timing ever as far as we're concerned.
Right.
I swear, we were dealing with rumors on the last show. And
we were.
What was it? 30 seconds after we hung up, we went, oh, for Pete's sake. I think we were still on doing our post-show wrap-up when the news came in. It's really,
I think their marketing department was like, okay, they're almost done with the podcast.
Three,
release.
Two, one.
Yeah.
So, of course, after CBS All Access was sure that we had finished recording episode 66 of The Topic is Trek. That's right. The streaming service officially confirmed that the long-rumored Captain Pike series has been greenlit for production. Yes.
Wah, wah, wah.
In a short promotional video, stars Anson Mount, Ethan Peck, and Rebecca Romaine told the world that, quote, Star Trek Strange New Worlds. Where'd they get that title?
I don't know.
It's strange.
They should have called it like To Boldly Go or something. It would be coming into Viacom CBS streaming service. I like their time frame. Soon.
Like 2 years soon. I don't know.
Everything's relative.
Well, yeah. They didn't say anything about it on the Star Trek cruise, so we're safe. Star Trek.
I think it was more of a wink, wink, nod, nod on the cruise.
Hey, that's why I gave him the, you know, my spot in the karaoke that night. You can have my karaoke spot, Anson, if you give me an inside scoop on the series.
And he said, no, wink, yeah, wink. We're not doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. What are you talking about?
Talk to Mary Chifo. See what she knows. She says, I'm up next. Sit down, boy. Star Trek fans have been clamoring to see Captain Christopher Pike has helmed the original starship since the premiere, of course, of season 2 of Discovery. Speaking just for myself, Mount said in the announcement video, I have never received more love from a fan base than I have from the Star Trek family. Wow, that cruise really went to his head, didn't it?
Drank a lot.
Without you, this wouldn't be happening, Peck added in his best Spock voice. It's a huge honor. Alex Kurtzman will serve as the executive producer of Strange New Worlds alongside Akiva Goldsman. I'm going to try to get through these names. Forgive me if any of them are off. Jenny Lumet, Henry Alonzo Myers, Heather Caden, Rod Roddenberry, and Trevor Roth. Goldsman, Kurtzman, and Lumet co-wrote the series premiere episode, so it's already been written. Now we just got to get the actors together.
We got nothing else better to do.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All that needs to happen now is we just have to film it and edit it and put in the effects. And it's, so that part just takes care of itself.
That's the
where the soon comes in. I got it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, it's like, well, it's going to happen when we can do it, I guess. So
we got three irons in the fire for sure.
Yep. Well, we have five irons in there for sure. Because we've got Section 31.
Was that official?
Yeah, they said they're going to start. We got Section.
So that's four.
So we got Section 31, Strange New Worlds. We have the next season of Picard, and we have the two animated series.
Oh, that's right.
Okay. Lower Decks and the unnamed Nickelodeon one. And did Discovery get renewed for more than just season 3? I think they just got renewed for season 3.
I thought it was renewed for 3 and 4.
I didn't hear anything about 4 yet.
Maybe not.
But we know 3 is in the fire. I mean, in the works.
Right.
It's coming.
Right.
It's coming.
Well, if you should have pressed for more information on the cruise, you should just say, hey, come on,
give us
the game plan for, you know, the next 5 years and we'll be good.
I'll keep it under my hat.
All right, there we go. And then they'll just open up his hat when it's on the show. Anyway, the next Star Trek movie, remember that? Well, Simon Pegg does. Pegg, who has portrayed Scotty in the Kelvin Timeline Trek movies, still doesn't know if he and his parallel timeline crewmates will be in writer-director James Holly's script. However, he does have thoughts on the scope of the movie. And I'm not going to try to do a Simon Pegg voice, so don't even ask me. The fact is, Pegg explained, the appeal of Star Trek is slightly more niche than the appeal of, say, the Marvel movies, which make huge amounts of money and have this really, really broad appeal, and they do very well. I think Star Trek is just a little more niche, so it isn't going to hit those kind of numbers. So, yes, the obvious thing to do would be to not go for that massive spectacle. Go for something a little more restrained in the vein of the original series. Yes, that would be a brilliant thing to do, and I'm sure that probably has been discussed. Peg even suggested that perhaps Viacom CBS should let CBS side of things run things for now. Maybe TV is a better place for Star Trek now. Television has evolved so much, it's become something which is very much a contemporary, a peer of cinema. It's simply viewed in a different way. It isn't a reduction scope anymore. You can still do masses of interesting things, and it can still look modern and not inexpensive. Well, of course, Star Trek's origins are in television, so I think we pretty well know it works there, and I think the current slate of things we were just talking about say that it worked there. I don't know, Star Trek has had a kind of off-again, on-again deal with cinema.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. It's a hit or miss, and you know, you can't go spend $50 bazillion on it if it's not a $50 bazillion theater franchise.
Right, right. And I think that, you know, if you build slowly, you might be able to get there. But, you know, I think to that point, if you start off with, as we talked about last episode, I think the budget of a Star Trek II that was like minuscule compared to Star Trek, the motion picture.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Then you get a return on it, and then you can play off of that on 3 and 4 and 5 and 6. And you can just try to ramp up from there or build something out of that. So I definitely think this is the case. And I think the problem would be after doing 3 of the Kelvin timeline movies, if they wanted to go that route for more Kelvin, but at a reduced budget, then we hit the problem that we hit why Star Trek IV went off the rails to begin with, is because Paramount wanted to renegotiate the salaries for Pike and Hemsworth. And I think they'd have to renegotiate all of those contracts if they were going to use, you know, that crew. So you're automatically, you're saying, okay, if we want to reduce budget, you guys are out. We got to go some other direction with it.
I see two scenarios here. One is they just say, it's doing great on TV. We don't need the theater. Leave it alone. We're still making bucket loads of money without spending double bucket loads in the theater. The other thing is, if they want to keep the cost down, aka not paying tons and tons of salary to the big stars, they could conceivably take it in a backstory way, a la Wrath of Khan, but not focused around the major characters as well. Take another story that would kind of like Rogue One, you know, very enjoyable movie, didn't involve the big stars, but it was still in that same universe. Could you do a Star Trek movie that had a different vibe to it without Hemsworth, without Zachary, without the bigger names that are going to demand the higher salaries? I think that might be an interesting way to go with the story.
Well, it's tough because, I mean, then you would have to decide, do you want to keep it Kelvin timeline or do you want to make it Prime timeline? And if whatever decision you make there, that pretty much sets the tone that, okay, not only are those guys out for this, but pretty much we've now abandoned that timeline and that's gone and we're moving on to something completely different. Because, you know, I can't see them saying, oh, sure, after like 3 more movies, we want to come back and, you know, pick up the franchise. So it will be, I don't feel envious of Holly for trying to figure out how this is going to work. It sounds like he's got a story idea, and whether or not that story involves or is dependent upon what the actors are, you know, which timeline it's in, I don't know. But that's a decision that I don't want to be the one to have to make.
I personally think I prefer Star Trek on the small screen anyway.
Well, there's certainly a plethora of it right now, which is good.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, I like it. I've talked about it before, but I like it because you get to explore the different characters in there and not just kind of focus on a story and have to split up the 2 hours over, you know,
right,
8 little subplots or whatever.
Right. Or somebody just gets short shrift altogether. It's like, Sulu had 3 lines, you know.
Oh, Uhura was in that one? Oh,
yeah.
She voiced the computer again.
Yeah, there you go. All right. So when I was picking stories, I had just gone through the one that was about Simon Pegg, and I came across this other story about another franchise that Simon Pegg is involved with, and it's also Star Trek related. So I thought it would be a nice fit in here. So Craig, you want to tell us about it?
Yeah. So, you know, Ronald D. Moore has revealed how Captain Picard and the Borg actually helped out Mission Impossible 2. I know you're like, what?
Huh?
But it seems that after Oliver Stone and the two original writers of the sequel to Tom Cruise's hit Mission Impossible, stands the number, film will left the project. The studio needed to a new set of eyes to come in and rework the existing treatment to come up with something new. And based on the success they had with Star Trek First Contact, Moore and fellow Star Trek alumni Brandon Braga were invited to meet with Cruise. Although the screenplay credit went to Dr. Robert Towne, Moore and Braga were responsible for developing the basic plot of the film, as well as working on set pieces like the mid-air plane hijacking and opening rock climbing sequence. So, you know, not bad for a follow-up to about the invention of warp drive, right?
Yeah, I thought that was interesting that it's a long article, and you can find it over in the show notes for episode 67 over at thetopicistrek.com. It's a long story that talks about how Moore and Braga worked with Cruise on this and did various inspiration for things, but the whole beginnings of this were the fact that it had nothing to do with anything other than, hey, you did a really cool job with this other thing, which is basically another movie version of a television show, right? So Mission Impossible was a television show that was brought
to
movies. Mm-hmm. So it seemed like a really good fit to do that. And I'd forgotten that they were involved with that because, again, the screen credit goes to somebody else on that. Although I think they're given story credit for the screenplay. All right. Let's move on from the world of cinema. Hey, oh, yes.
Yep. Hey, before you move on, I would just...
We'll stay here for a moment then. Yes.
You remember Father Roderick, right?
Yes.
Yes.
They were listening to him. So I subscribed to his YouTube channel, and just a little while ago, I saw he was live. He was recording his podcast. So I played it for the video for a few minutes and watched. And he was talking about Ronald D. Moore writing for George Lucas on Star Wars. And I went, wait.
Whoa.
And so I thought for a second, I don't remember him writing for Star Wars. So I had to go look. I didn't see anything in his credits or his IMDb or anything. I was like, okay, I think he was speaking hypothetically. He would like to see Ronald D. Moore write for Star Wars, which that could be interesting, I guess. But anyway.
Or he was confused. He just remembered Star or something. And
no, he was. Well, Father Roderick is a huge Star Wars fan. He used to run the Force.net website a long time ago. And you know, if you remember that. So
I do.
Yeah. So anyway, I just thought it was funny that we had a story in here talking about Ronald D. Moore, of course, writing Star Trek. You know, he's got a long history of Star Trek, but Father Roderick was talking about him doing Star Wars. And I was like, what?
Oh, that reminds me, again, kind of off topic, but talk about this. They had an interview. Might have been CBS News. I can't recall. I was watching this interview with the, I think there's the head of NASA or the head of the Space Flight Center, and the countdown clock for the launch that didn't happen today was in the background. And at the end of the interview, the reporter says, okay, now we have a lightning round of, you know, questions. I'm going, lightning, what are you quizzing this guy on what he knows? The first or second question he said was Star Wars or Star Trek? I thought, oh my God, stop.
Yeah.
But the guy's answer was great. His answer was Spaceballs.
Love it.
Nice.
So there you go. All right. Well, let's get off of all that stuff. And no, I think Chuck's going to tell us a story that has nothing to do with space or launches or any of those type of things. No.
But while you guys were talking, I was thinking about a new storyline for a movie.
Okay.
It's an origin story, how the Borg got started.
Hmm.
Think about
one
that.
One man with a dream.
Think about that. How did they get started? They weren't always...
Dr. Noonien Singh was tinkering around in his workshop.
Lab late one night.
Oops.
No, I tell you how it started. It started in an inauspicious way. You know how you're always walking around, if you've got kids around, and you step on a Lego? Yes. Well, this time the Lego stayed.
It was it was an inverted IC chip with the legs sticking up, and
it's
caught in the guy's foot.
That's how it all started.
Uh-huh. That's a short movie, Clinton. It doesn't make it at the end of the movie. At the end of the movie, nobody's going, "Oh, I get it now."
Well, then you have Lego Batman come in and stuff, and it's takes a whole different turn.
Yes. I'm Batman.
Okay, I'm just workshopping this idea right now. I don't have it finished yet.
We are seriously spaghetti on the wall here. We're like Jello on the wall.
I'm smelling some fan fiction coming up.
Uh-huh. Any listeners out there, let me know. Okay, let's get on with our story. We're not exactly how to interpret this article, so be aware. First, the new Space Force branch of the military renamed their facility at Vandenberg Air Force Base Space Operations Center, or of course, SPOC, confirmed, yes, it's pronounced Spock. Good for us. Then the Space Force insignia was revealed, bearing a striking resemblance to the one used by Starfleet. Now, Space Force has decided that the name for their new software that tracks man-made objects in space will be, wish I had a drum roll, Kobayashi Maru. That's right. The infamous no-win scenario from Star Trek will now be responsible for keeping track of potentially deadly orbiting satellites and debris. We just hope that they don't just pick the name because it sounds cool. After all, we don't yet have James T. Kirk around to outwit the disaster. Although Chris Pine and William Shatner will be on speed dial.
Right.
Yeah, it's like you guys do realize what that name means, right?
No, they don't. They don't.
The good news is we spotted it. The bad news is we can't do anything about it because, you know... Kobayashi Maru.
I would not want to name any software Kobayashi Maru, by the way.
Just admitting my own ignorance, is there anything else, like in the real world today, named Kobayashi Maru? Like an old emperor from feudal Japan? Hey, I don't know.
Hey, I always thought if I had a boat, I would name it that.
Mm-hmm.
but I don't want to be riding on your boat. I'm just telling you right now.
Oh, nice boat. Hey, see you later.
Hey, look, there's sharks in the water, and here comes, a tidal wave. What's your boat's name? Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, the Space Force insignia, everybody was like, oh, it looks just like Star Trek. Actually, it's the other way around.
Yes.
Insignia was from the Air Force, and they've had it for a long time. And I think Starfleet actually took inspiration from it. So I thought that was... I was like, okay, I'll give them that. I didn't realize it was that old.
Yeah, I read in one of the articles, actually it's one of the articles in the show notes, talking about when they revealed the flag, which we'd already seen the logo before the flag ceremony. But I didn't pursue that to see exactly. Did you get a chance to see, Craig? Was it pretty much the same as what we're seeing with this new Space Force logo? Or was it kind of inspired by, and does it morph more towards what Starfleet looks like or what that look like?
Well, obviously, what the Delta Shield looks like. This one is more of a triangle, almost like a star without the right and left.
Take the Delta prongs. Airlines logo, you know, with the orange triangle with the upturned bottom, and just smoosh it a little narrower. That and make it silver. Okay, it's kind of a two-tone halvesy thing. Like,
there you go. Put it in the show notes. Go look at it.
Okay.
Two triangles.
Okay, but that's the Space Force one. Right. But they're talking about something that's older than that. Like this, like
oh, the original one you mean? Oh,
like,
I see.
Yeah, right. It's like that one I've seen, and that's the one that looks like the Starfleet one. You know, you've got the orbiting thing going around and all that kind of stuff. So I know they said it was inspired by, and this makes great audio. I'm sure you guys agree. The article that I was reading talked about how there was an existing thing that this is kind of based off of, and I'm not sure what that one looked like, so I don't know, is it leaning more towards looking like the Starfleet one or leaning more towards looking like the original one that was from the 40s? And so
here, we'll look at this one.
Oh, we've got incoming
audio, but there you go.
Well, we'll leave the stuff in the show notes.
So it looks, you know, looks very retro, the old one.
Oh, I don't see
it
yet.
I'm not seeing it. It didn't paste or didn't catch up.
Did it hang up on everybody?
No.
No, we just don't see the
image. I see your pink cursor
did
sitting
Skype
there.
Up?
Uh-oh. I think we lost him.
Craig?
Hello.
Hello. Craig?
Hey there.
Hi.
Are you there?
Someone's going to have some audio editing to do. I think your internet just went weird because it took forever to paste that image and you couldn't hear
us. I bet it did. Yeah, I was like, what's going on? I went, oh, I bet it's uploading him. Anyway, do you see it?
Yes.
Yeah, now we see it. Yeah, so I'm calling inspiration in both directions.
Yep.
Because this is not round, and this does not have a single orbiting thing that doesn't have a complete orbit thing going on. This is like almost like the Unisphere with two complete orbiting satellite type. So,
Look, aside from all this, I'm looking forward to Steve Carell's Space Force on Friday.
Yes. Exactly. I was going to say, when all is said and done, there's the important part about the whole thing. So we're going to leave in the show notes this older version of the Air Force Space Command logo compared to the Starfleet Command logo, because I think that's a better comparison so you can see what the original inspiration was. For apparently both of them. And so you can check that over in the show notes for episode 67 over at thetopicistrek.com. Okay, so now that all our technical glitches are completely taken care of, thank you, interwebs.
Yes.
And I'm sure the audience was thrilled by our hello, hello.
I'm not supposed to call it out. We were going to edit it, but now it's too late.
Yeah.
Oh,
now it's
right.
Canon. Thanks,
it is.
Clinton.
Hey. Whatever it takes, man. Whatever it takes.
Craig still has problems copying and pasting is what it boils down to.
Yeah. I'll have to stop doing that in the future.
I told you, don't use actual glue next time. It's not. That's the problem right there.
Cut my monitor with my scissors.
But now that Craig is back, what do you say we go on to his article?
Let's do it.
Yeah. So Patrick Stewart was dropping a little bit of little hints to what we can see in the next Picard series. So Patrick Stewart is hinting at things to come, and while he does not have any specifics, he says that they're not going to cover the same ground. They're actually going to try and change things up, and he said that season two would be extraordinary. Of course, he's going to say that, but given that some of the things that we saw at the end of season one, like body swapping and, you know, a bunch of androids and who knows what else? Borg's still floating around. Who knows what's coming up? So it also looks like we're going to see more TNG peeps popping up in the show. We have heard that Brent Spiner wants back in, but not as Data. And we've also heard that LeVar Burton wants in, and he's interested, but not as Data.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah, how about a character swap?
He'll be put back together as B4.
Let's see Brent Spiner with the visor and see LeVar Burton with.
There's your body swapping right there. Yeah.
Geordi doesn't need the visor in the future, remember?
That's true. Anyway, so Patrick Stewart said that in early conversations, one of the things he was adamant about was making sure that they were not the exact same characters that you remember, because, you know, after 18 years have passed on, they wanted to make sure that the characters grew and changed over time, just like I guess some people do, not everybody. Anyway, so like especially like with Riker and Troy when we saw in Nepenthe. So bringing back old characters from the show also looks like they're leaning into the nostalgia factor a little bit, because we also heard that not only we're doing Pike and Spock and Number One show, but it looks like they're casting a Kirk for that. So who knows? You know, it looks like they might be leaning into old characters.
Mm. Well, those characters can be more like we remember them because they're supposed to be going into the way that characters would be. So that's almost a reverse.
No, I mean that, but they're talking about the TNG characters for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Having grown over time, you know, he didn't want them to be the same thing.
There's also, now, interesting is like how much, because Robert Picardo was talking about being contact about being in season two of Picard. So how much does the Doctor change over time?
Although I want to see him show up like a pimp with a big hat and some gold chains.
We did the pimp thing in the club.
Yeah, that's right. That's so season one.
Yeah, that's right.
But at the end of the final episode of Voyager, I mean, he's like the college professor with the patches and things like that. I think he's kind of like a Data type of thing going on there. So there was something. He seemed very different at the end of Voyager.
Like seeing Data in All Good Things, where he had the gray stripe in his hair.
Yes. It's totally natural. Natural.
They gave Troy a gray stripe once when she artificially aged on TNG. They like that effect.
In the future, it was like an alternate.
It's a cheap way of getting that, you know, that across. Oh, they got older, they got a gray streak.
Hey, I thought she looked like with her hair and that gray streak. I thought she looked like the Bride of Frankenstein a little bit.
There's an echo in here somewhere.
His audio is still catching up after the cut and paste. All right. So I know that seemed like a lot of stories, but our list of other Star Trek stories is starting to grow again, because this time around there are 32 additional stories that we didn't have a chance to cover. And you can read about all sorts of things in there. We can pick out about how Star Trek's Khan became a Green Lantern supervillain, if you want to know about that. Just all sorts of things in there. Which Star Trek cast responds to fans, if you want to know, you know, who to write or get in contact with, who'll contact you back. All those stories are in there, and you can check those out.
Hey, by the way, before, I'm sorry, go ahead. The last episode, we talked about Alexander Siddig's Zoom chat he was doing every Friday, you know, with the audience. I actually jumped in on it, the last one, and it was actually kind of fun. There were several people talking about their own personal stuff. Actually, Sid was interviewing listeners. You know, people would have a question, of course, they would drop a question in. But he was kind of interviewing them back, which I thought was interesting, and just having a conversation with them. And then Ira Bear came in, and he sat in for about an hour and a half, really, and just took questions and talked to people. And a couple of people, I remember this one girl asked him a question. I can't remember the exact question, but he was like, no, it would never work. And he it was some theory she had. And he kind of bit back on it, not angrily, just they had a conversation, but I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting. So yeah, it was kind of fun. So if you get a chance to go check it out, I certainly suggest it.
On a similar note, Nana Visitor had a Facebook broadcast. It was co-hosted by TJ from The Cruise, the ECP guy, and she was doing, what was it called, Dear Nana?
It
was kind
right.
of like a Dear Abby thing, and people would throw questions out, and either TJ would read them or she would read them, and then she'd respond back. She's a really insightful person. Wise advice. So that was enjoyable. I watched probably 15 minutes of it, and I don't know how long she went on, but eventually.
Yeah, I remember seeing that. I didn't get to watch it, though.
Yeah. It turned out pretty good. Donna was watching it for a lot longer than I was.
All right, it's your turn, Clinton. You got to go stalk a star.
Okay, I'm on it. I'm on it.
He's been stalking me.
Yeah. Darn it, secret's out.
He's
got to start low.
Yeah. All right, well, before we are done with Subspace Chatter, I think it's time to check in with Vulcan, Alberta, Canada.
Yay!
And if you want to keep up with the progress the new Star Trek themed pool, which we've talked about in the past, being installed in town, then you can go to the Town of Vulcan Recreation Department Facebook page. An article in the Vulcan Advocate says that the department will be posting weekly videos highlighting ongoing construction. But when I went over to their Facebook page, the last video was from 9 weeks ago. And the photo that was in the article was further along in construction than the Facebook page videos were. So I don't know, maybe just check out the Vulcan Advocate online instead for the progress on the pool.
Set up a webcam.
Yeah.
Well, it was also weird because the video showing ongoing construction essentially was somebody plopped a camera down and there was a backhoe doing some digging of a hole and there was a slight snowfall going on.
So it was still May.
And it ran for like 5 minutes, just nonstop, no cuts, no zooms, no nothing. And that was it. That was the video.
Like someone set their phone down on their lunchbox.
Yeah. So check it out. Maybe they'll get better if the weather gets nicer and as far as the progress goes. But like I said, the photo, they already have the pool basically put in. And they hadn't done all filling in the stuff around it, the landscaping and so forth. But they was much further along than you would think it was based on those weekly updates.
Well, this time lapse is from 5/19.
Oh, there must be a new one there since I just didn't hit the right one. So that's cool. All right, that's a time lapse. All right, that's much better than what I saw.
Well, what's funny is they didn't edit it. It's like it starts from 30 seconds. It's daylight. It goes to night. And it literally, they netted out the night part.
You're
so it's all dark.
The whole night.
It's dark for about 20 seconds. Then it gets light again.
It's the full experience that way. All right. Well, that's
Vulcan.
Well, I feel better. I feel better that there's actually something that's more current there. I was getting worried going, I don't know if I trust this article.
They have to play the whole video because insufficient facts always invite danger.
Ah, I see. And they are very logical. So very good.
They didn't clean the camera off either. Cause it's like it got wet and it's muddy. I can't see everything. So, oh, well, classic Vulcan.
We're going to have to go up there with a squeegee. There we go. Yeah. All right. It's time to come back from our main mission with an appropriate sound effect. Wow, that's backing up from Subspace Chatter. I don't know what that was all about.
That was the subterranean elevator, of course.
Well, of course it was. All right, and dare I say, I'm not sure at this point, time to go out on our main mission with appropriate sound effect.
There you go. That'll work.
I love my job. I just see him wincing, like curling away from the microphone.
Yeah.
And then you get this ding.
All right. Well, it is time to do some more of our rewatch review of Star Trek, the animated series. Woo-hoo! Last time around, we did the first two episodes. And this time, because we've already done all of our backstory, the history of how this thing came to be, Star Trek, the animated series, we're going to do three, not one, not two, but three episodes of the series.
That was a slog, let me tell you.
It was indeed. This is like a whole hour's worth of show right there. Literally watching, they were 22 minutes apiece, a whole hour's worth of watching. All right, we're going to begin with episode number three, which was One of Our Planets is Missing, and that was written by Mark Daniels. Aired first on September 22nd, 1973. Now, Daniels might be a familiar name to you if you're a fan of the original series, because he directed 15 episodes of that series, including The Man Trap, Mirror Mirror, The Menagerie, Space Seed, and I, Mud. But he also directed Spock's Brain, so we have to put that in there as well. And an interesting piece of trivia that I found out today that I don't think I knew before, but just because I'm remembering it now doesn't mean I didn't know it before, learning it now. Daniels makes a very brief cameo appearance on screen in The Changeling. Okay. I don't know if you remember, but there's a scene where they're checking on the history of Nomad, and they show a picture of James Roykirk, the person who designed Nomad. That's Mark Daniels in a costume.
I'll be darned.
So you learn something new every day. But what about the episode itself that Mark Daniels wrote? Well, a huge cosmic cloud moves into the outer fringe of the galaxy, being our galaxy. The Enterprise investigates this huge cosmic cloud, and its sensors indicate that it's a strange combination of matter and energy that engulfs and feeds on the energy of planets. When the cloud deliberately changes course towards the populated planet of
Mantilli,
that's right. It is seen to be a threat for every planet in the galaxy. So we have several things going on here. I feel like Mark Daniels was kind of going over some stuff we dealt with in the original series, and was in a way kind of foreshadowing Star Trek the Motion Picture, or some draft of the, you know, Star Trek Phase Two.
Very,
I suppose,
astute observation.
I actually had that same thought, because I was like, well, haven't we been in a cloud before?
But it's kind of like you've got a combination of the Doomsday Machine and sometimes names escape me, but the I'll call it the one with the amoebas on the planet where they have to use the lights, because I'm horrible with names sometimes.
Oh,
but
the fried eggs, yeah.
The fried eggs.
So they, you know, hot, we have to save the children, you know, type of thing. And you have the fact that it's this cloud, so it's kind of got overtures to V'ger at the same time. It's really kind of all over the board. You have Spock doing this intergalactic mind meld.
He reaches out with his feelings, but he's got to use his arms to do it. I thought that, what, those antennas, or is he Christian all of a sudden? I didn't understand that.
I feel the power.
and then he's being the eyes and ears of the cloud, shades of Ilea.
Yeah.
You know, so it's I didn't know really what to make of the episode. I mean, I remember the episode, but I'm looking at it now from all these years later and knowing what came after it. And I'm saying, well, it's kind of like this, but this didn't exist when that was done. But, you know, so which was inspired by which, I don't know anymore.
Hey, a funny quote from McCoy. He's like, when they got into the cloud, he's like, wow, we're like floating in this cloud.
Yeah.
I was thinking, just 2 minutes ago, you were floating in space.
Yeah, it was like nothing.
There were a couple of interesting pieces in here. When they're in the engine room and you see these sparks flying all over the place.
Like, yeah.
What was that? And then there's a scene towards the end where Kirk says, quiet. And there's nobody talking.
Yeah, I've got a feeling there was
hearing voices in my head.
Again, I have a feeling there was. I think there was like twice that happened in this episode.
The editing was unusual.
Yeah, I don't know what some dialogue got cut, but they didn't want to cut like the time because we paid for the animation. We're going to keep the animation, but we're going to cut that line. We're going to keep the line after it, but we're going to cut that line.
What I didn't see, 30, 40 years ago when I watched this, because it was on a lot lower resolution TV, but you get a 75 inch there, you can see the animation cells being dragged across each other.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God. I remember seeing that at the time on television going, wow, this is really, I mean, oh no, you go back, you can look at it on your Magnavox television and you would see it there too.
It's, why are some of the stars keeping up with the ship?
Or you see the dust moving with the cell.
Exactly.
Yeah. You see that in a lot of Hanna-Barbera stuff too.
Part of the charm of this.
It was odd as well that I don't know whether it was this episode or one of the other ones where the stars that were receding when they were in warp, some type of going sideways.
Oh, yeah. The ship is always going sideways. It's like it's got one nacelle out of whack. But the stars are coming straight at the camera, but the ship is moving from left to right at this weird angle.
Yeah, I don't really. So, I mean, the episode, I'm not sure what to say about the episode. It was almost a by the book episode in a lot of ways that you encounter the alien. You know, the alien actually is intelligent. You explain to the alien that something's wrong, and they go, oops, my bad. And they just, kind of. The thing is that I get a kick out of the fact that this thing is feeding off of energy, right? So it's traveled from another galaxy, and supposedly.
He asks it to go home.
And it goes, okay.
It's a long way, but why not?
Can I have a snack like that little moon over there or something,
Snack. One for the road.
And the calmest, like governor of a planet ever, just kind of really like, he's like droopy dog going, we'll save the children. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let them go first. All right.
I guess.
Why didn't they just like aim the cloud over at the Romulans or something?
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah. No, wait, that's not what we do in Starfleet.
Solve two problems.
So let's wait till the end and we'll rate all three of them on our scale. All right. So next up is the Lorelei syndrome.
And that was
written by Margaret Armin. And that first aired on September 29th, 1973. Armin also wrote for the original series, as well as on a wide variety of TV shows. I didn't list everything here. Go over to the Internet Movie Database and look up, Margaret's, her credits, but I listed a few here. The Name of the Game, The Mod Squad, The $6 Million Man, Land of the Lost, and Jason of Star Command. And you can throw in Marcus Welby, MD, and Diagnosis Murder, and The Big Valley, and it's just like everything. So this was her stab at the animated series, what she thought she could do to really expand the horizons. And what we end up with is a mysterious signal from an unexplored planet mesmerizes the male crewman of the Enterprise into daydreaming of fantasy women. Following the signal, Captain Kirk and the landing party are lured into a trap. Meanwhile, the female crewmen remain unaffected by the signal and must take control of the ship and rescue Kirk, Spock, McCoy, and Lieutenant Carver. And I put Lieutenant Carver in there for a reason, because this red shirt gets no credit. I mean, there he is. He's like just crewman of the week. He goes down to that planet. Says he's going to do his job. Kirk says, no, you don't have to. He goes, okay, cool. I'm cool with that. Follows him into, the chamber there. Gets the same stuff done to him. And the sucking his life force out. He gets stuck in the pod and they're going to drown. Doesn't drown. Gets back on board the ship. Is in there with sick bay with the other people. Gets put in the transporter.
No one talks to him.
Yeah, gets turned back into a crewman, and he lives, and he's a red shirt, and he deserves credit, damn it.
I think he's one of the only ones. But nobody, aside from Kirk saying, nah, you don't have to do that, that's about the only dialogue he had in the whole show. He's just sort of this extra figure that's riding along the story.
And as I'm writing up these notes, I was thinking to myself, I remember he was called by name, and then I thought, wait a minute, does he survive? Because he just kind of like, he just disappears into the background.
You're dead to me.
So I'm watching the episode. It's like, no, he's in that shot. Okay, he's there. No, he's in the pot. Oh, he must drown. No, he doesn't drown. They get him. He's right. They start the pan across everybody with him in sick bay. And so this guy just says nothing else.
They become so accustomed to the red shirt dying, they just... He's dead to them. He doesn't exist after scene 42. He's not there anymore.
Don't make eye contact with the red shirt guys.
They're usually dead by this point. I don't know who that guy over there is.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, McCoy had another quote.
Oh, good Lord. There were tons of them in these ones.
So McCoy says, Spock talks about what makes them, their physiology different than regular females.
Oh, yes.
He goes, that's the first time I admired a body function.
Right.
I was like, you're a doctor.
I'm a doctor, not a doctor.
But he's also half crocked out of his mind by this time.
That's the first time I admired a body function.
I did like the premise that the women on the ship took control and they went and rescued the men. I thought that was very female empower ship.
Although when they all went down to the planet, they all looked like the same Barbie doll with a different hairstyle.
Well, it was Uhura and Chapel. You recognize those two. But then you had like Skipper with the freckles.
They look like a lineup of Barbies. Like, oh, they just made her brunette.
And how
is that any different? Is it that any different than the cookie cutter alien women who are all white women with white hair?
I could tell the difference between them all.
Oh, could you? Really?
They said, we came to this planet and they're wearing the same clothes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the guys didn't wear shirts. Apparently they hadn't invented shirts for guys, at that point. But
Uhura magically knew the name of the Opto-Odd, their little remote viewer thing. Nobody ever told her, but she said she mentioned it by name before. There was another odd scene when they were kind of taking inventory of what they got. The men are captive, and Bones looks in his medical kit. He goes, oh, I got a hypo spray. They didn't take that. It's cortropine, powerful stimulant, and they never do anything with it. Like, well, that was a dead end.
I'm just throwing it on the ground here.
And then Spock figures he can, if these doors are magnetically locked, I can unlock them and we'll make a break for it. Well, so much for the cortropine, I guess. We don't need that.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, speaking of Spock, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Clinton.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead. Because mine is just like a weird observation. So,
well, you know, when they were all in that urn vase thing out in the the rain. Well, before it started raining, of course, they're all sitting there and they're all talking really slow and monotonous, kind of don't have any energy. And then when the one time Spock perks up is when he's given the odds, it's like,
yes,
oh, we got 325 ticks to one.
97.1 to 1.
Everything was like a different recording session where they forgot that they were supposed to be talking that way. He did that on board
when he was back in sick bay too. Nurse, must transporter is the key. If we get everything rerouted back through the program, it was like, whoa, dude.
That's what I was like. Wow, he got excited. He's really about his
excited
eyes.
By that. Yeah, he gets really excited by that stuff. And meanwhile, Carver's going, I could have said that. Yes, yes, we know.
Shut up, Carver.
We won't let you say anything anymore. I thought it was interesting that you can make the argument because of Janice Lester that this wasn't the first time, but this is the first time that a woman is in charge of the Enterprise. And we have also, she takes over because it's like, well, what we're going to do is we're going to let Scotty sing an entire song
while the ship is slowly creeping across the screen from left to right.
And then we're going to say, maybe you shouldn't be sitting in the chair anymore.
Wait, but we like the song. Scotty, Scotty's slow scene was foreshadowing Star Trek, the motion picture, too.
Yes. Is that like the flyover of a future?
Wait, I got an idea. Let's borrow some from the comics, from the animated series. Let's move this really slow.
See, we'll combine it with the cloud that was in the previous episode. It's brilliant.
They pretty much cut and pasted them.
Yeah.
So I will say to people that watch this now going, this is just so like, this vision of the women type of thing is going, even at the time, trust me, we're sitting there going, why do they all look the same? So it's just, why is there no variety for, like there? Yeah.
And why does Nurse Chapel sound just like Thela? I love going through the IMDb lists on these things going, wow, Uhura did a lot of voice work on this one.
Not as much as Jimmy.
Jimmy.
Because he was also Lieutenant Carver for his one line. So.
Yeah.
And Eric's. But Uhura did the, I think it was in the cloud one, the previous one, where she was the voice on the computer.
Well, I think it was this one because it's a scene, because it's,
yes,
I think, pretty sure it's a scene in this where Majel is in the scene as Chapel. So they had figured, well, we have to have somebody else do the voice of the computer. So we'll have Nichelle do the voice of the computer, because it would seem like Nurse Chapel is talking to herself, you know?
Hey, it's an extra $75.
Yeah, they take it. They take it. All right, let's move on to number three in this. Of them is More Tribbles, More Troubles, written by David Gerald, which first aired on October 6th, 1973. Gerald is, of course, also the writer of the classic original series episode, The Trouble with Tribbles. And this episode started out as a proposed episode for the third season of Star Trek, the original series. However, third season producer Fred Freiberger hated the first Tribbles episode and its comedic tone, so it never got produced. Then when Dorothy, or DC Fontana, signed on as executive producer for the animated series, Gerald was the first writer she contacted, saying, "Hey, do you want to produce that episode for the animated series?
Hey, you got anything?" "Yes, right here."
Yep. And something that I didn't realize was supposed to be him, and even though I looked at it again going, it did stand out to me at the time. Gerald makes a cameo appearance in the episode in the transporter room scene. There's suddenly this character that has no lines, and it's not Lieutenant Carver, has no lines, wearing a red shirt. The face is drawn as if it's supposed to be somebody, and Kirk references him, you know, like Ensign, and the character just kind of walks off the scene.
Immortal. I'm immortal in a comic.
That's right.
Wow.
But I said, that is so odd. Why is that character there? And you know, that's why that character is there. So the plot synopsis is, while attempting to get supplies of Quinto Triticale, which is, of course, invented by Zachary Quinto.
That's right.
To Sermon's planet, it all comes around circle there. Right. The Enterprise happens across Cyrano Jones being pursued by Klingons. Kirk must not only deal with Jones and his supply of modified Tribbles, but also Captain Koloth and a dangerous new Klingon weapon, a projected stasis field. So in discussions about this with Gerald, he's quoted as saying that, well, he realized that it was going to be having a lot of the same beats as The Trouble with Tribbles. So he was trying to concentrate on different things. I mean, we still essentially end up in the same places, especially when apparently there's only one Klingon captain that can come anywhere near Cyrano Jones. And that's Koloth.
He even uses the same line on Kirk, you know, the tin plated overbearing. It's like, what? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you copy. You, yeah, no.
Yeah. And of course, that's Jimmy doing his voice, because, you know, God forbid it should be the actual actor that did it. No matter how they disguise it, you still said, well, and then this is going to happen, and that's going to happen, and then that's going to happen, and then we're going to have, you know, the wacky ending to the wacky episode type of thing. I mean, don't get me wrong, it was fun to see it again, but I guess I was kind of waiting for that other twist in there that was going on. I suppose the new element that was in there was the projected stasis field.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, that didn't work out quite as well as they thought. So they said, well, they won't be using that much anymore. We were introduced to the Glommer. So
yes,
we have a way of disposing of smaller Tribbles, although it did have a problem wrestling some of the bigger ones. I did enjoy, you know, those invisible dog walking leashes?
Yes.
People on the cruise had those with a Glommer attached to the end. So they're out walking their Glommer. I thought that was hysterical.
Yeah, that is funny.
The Tribbles were very nervous, I'm sure.
Yeah. We did learn that, I guess, Koloth was a terrible shot, because they shot like 16 to 20 shots at the freighter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the unnamed freighter. Yeah.
And as for good lines, we have Uhura saying, "We could always throw rocks," to which later Spock says, "We could always throw Tribbles at them."
Trying to one-up me, Spock? I see.
I see what you did there.
That was the longest, I think, we've ever seen Scotty try to reanimate somebody in the transporter.
Yeah.
He was like, moving those levers up and down. Like, yeah, wow.
What was funny was, I'm still trying. And then they would do other things. And about 5 minutes later, you're still trying. I'm like, really?
Didn't the episode with Reg Barkley say, you know, after about 30 seconds, you're pretty much dead. So
I was going to say the pattern buffer was like, it's used up at this point. I don't know. We Stack Overflow, man. I mean, he's gone.
It started out as a Starfleet Admiral. And we ended up with Cyrano Jones because the pattern degraded.
Hey, and how many times did Kirk have to push a Tribble out of his chair?
And it kept getting bigger. How did that thing get up there? That's what I want to know.
Well, we talked about in the last episode that thing about barking the line that, you know, that had no setup for it, and then the odd changes and stuff. So the biggest Tribble that Kirk pushes up the chair, he pushes it off, and then his dialogue, it's as if he's pushing it off. It's gone off the chair. He's going, and somebody, did you get a hernia? What happened there? It's like, why are you still doing that?
Strain a muscle.
That's the only take we have of the audio. We have to patch it in somewhere.
And of course, Kirk's smirk at the end. He almost did a wink at the camera, didn't he?
You're breaking the fourth wall, Kirk, in this space out there, so don't do it.
I know, they played the wonk, 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 wonk kind of music, and then Kirk looked at the camera. I was like, what are... Oh, well.
Fun for the whole family.
Yeah, it was fun, and at least we had, you know, Cyrano Jones back to be Cyrano Jones, so that was something.
If you've got to have Tribbles, it's best if all the Tribbles are little ones.
All right, well, that are our three episodes in our rewatch, and quite the three episodes they were. So last time around, we rated the episodes on a scale of 1 to 10. I don't know, were they 1 to 10 anything? But we're going to 1 to 10 Tribbles. Well, let's do one. So we got 1 to 10 clouds, 1 to 10 rain catching.
Warp factors, maybe?
Urns.
rain catching urns and Tribbles. All right. So for one of our planets is missing, which was our gas cloud.
I'm thinking that's episode. A good band name, Cosmic Cloud.
Right. Yeah, man, it's a gas, man. All right, I'm going to say one of our planets is missing. I mean, I like the fact that it kind of was foreshadowing, or kind of obviously was inspiring some stuff that hadn't happened, yet it was drawing on things from the past. So I'm going to go straight down the middle of that one. I'm going to give it a 5, which is kind of like, yeah, it was okay, but, you know, kind of, I'm giving it some bonus points because the fact that it was V'ger before V'ger was V'ger.
Maybe it turned out to be V'ger.
It was V'ger before V'ger was cool. Let's V'ger's put it that
mom.
Way. Yeah. All right. How about you, Chuck?
I'm going to go slightly higher with a 5.5.
Ooh, that is just slightly higher.
There wasn't much there, but you're right. It had some foreshadowing. I think Bob Wesley, the man on the planet, really brought life to the whole show.
Did he? The governor?
Yeah.
He left Starfleet to be at that place, and he didn't sound so excited about it.
You're right, Chuck. It's all we can do is give it a 5.5.
Quiet.
All right. And what about you, Craig, on a scale of 1 to 5 governors? One to 10 governors.
I'll also give it a 5. I enjoyed it enough where I thought it was all right, but because I did have the kind of, I got the idea that it was foreshadowing the motion picture a little bit. It was all right. And I guess for an entertainment factor, Spock doing his, healing hands. I can reach out with my mind. Anyway, I thought it was all right.
Listen to me. That's it. We need that on our podcast. We'll make a promo for this show. It'll just say, listen to me.
At the topic of Shrek.com. Ding.
Yeah, but they'll have to end with, leave this place. Will you leave?
But I thought it was all right. I enjoyed it enough.
Okay, let's move on to the Lorelei syndrome. which is our Sirens in Space episode with a rain-catching urn. How much is a Grecian urn? Not this episode, because I'm giving this one a 4. I don't remember being impressed by it, particularly when it was first on. And in a rewatch, I'm going, man, there's a lot of things going on here that just are, you know, like that endless Scotty sequence. And I just, no.
There was a lot to disappoint in this one.
Yeah. So what about you, Chuck?
What'd you say, a 4?
Yeah,
I'm going with a 5. It was a bit of a letdown, but I still see the benefit of the women empowerment taking over the ship, saving the guys. That was good stuff for me.
Okay,
I can look past Lieutenant Carver, like most of the other crew did.
No, he was the best part of the whole episode. Man, I'm telling you, he's a hero.
He can have a backstory.
Why are there not statues to this man?
He needs a backstory episode. Fanfic, Lieutenant Carver.
Where are the filk songs about Lieutenant Carver? I want to know. And somebody's out there waving the hand going, I wrote one. So anyway.
Dun, 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 dun. Who the heck is Lieutenant Carver?
All right. What about you, Craig?
I'm going to give this one a 5.5 for a lot of the same reasons that Chuck did. It was interesting to see the women actually come down and come to the rescue rather than, you know, seeing an all men cast down there doing their thing.
It had a happy ending.
It did. Mm-hmm. And I liked, I liked it. And, seeing, Uhura step up and say, I'm taking responsibility and taking control of this ship. And she was like, you know, she basically said on the recording, I'll record this later.
Yeah.
Like she's in control. So, not only was, you remember, you know, all the things about Uhura being not only just a black character on a show, but in Starfleet and all the things that went along with that and that mm-hmm. she's talked about multiple times. But then you see not just a female, but a black female taking control of the ship. You know, I think it was breaking some barriers a little bit.
Yeah, I wish there'd been more to the scene with her taking over. You know, she basically says to Scotty, I'm taking over, oh, that's very nice of you. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, that's because he was high as a kite. What do you expect?
He was.
He was in the catnip.
Yeah. All right, so there we go. And our last one, more troubles. Our classic Cyrano Jones and Koloth and Quinto Triticalian. I had to make sure I said that one correctly. I'm going to give this one. Well, let's see. I'm going to go 4.5 on this one. I think it was standard fare. The fact that it hit so many of the same beats as the Trouble with Tribbles that brought it down for me. So I want to give it middle of the road, but I think one too many of the original beats were hit. I'm going to lower a bit lower than average.
Well, I'm going in the other direction. I'm going 6. It's it's above the halfway on the meter, just from I think the nostalgia factor of the memorable episodes. This one ranks up there.
Okay. And what about you, Craig?
Well, that's exactly what I was going to do is go also with a 6 because, there was some humor in here. That kind of added to the, like you said, the nostalgic factor. You know what it reminded me of is I used to have a few those Star Trek 45s that basically had, I think it was some of these animated series put to audio. You know, where you just listen to the 45 and look at the book.
Ballad of Lieutenant Carver.
Yeah. But anyway, so I had a little
he
bit of.
He went down and he survived.
So I had a little bit of a nostalgia factor also. I thought it was all right. In the kind of wink and a nod at the end, I was like,
wah, made me wah, laugh. Wah, wah, wah.
It made me laugh, so that's worth a point in itself. So.
And Kirk and his unfortunate hernia after pushing that tribble off the chair. Yes.
Yeah. All 5 times.
Yeah. Same tribble, just kept getting makeup. Why don't you just like get him off the bridge? That'd be so much easier.
Somebody cut the legs off this tribble. Keeps getting in the chair.
All right. So unless something major comes up in the meantime, we will be proceeding on to the next three episodes. So if you, dear listener, want to also review them ahead of time, just look up episodes number 6, 7, and 8, right?
That's what we're doing next time. You got it.
Right. So we'll be watching 6, 7, and 8, and you watch 6, 7, and 8, and I don't know. Maybe we should try to one of these times. Maybe we should at some point try to have a watch party when we're doing one of these. Because if you've got CBS All Access or someplace else, some other access to the animated episodes, we could try to put one of those together.
We could do that.
Of them.
Yeah. We could do that.
All right. Well, we'll see if we have the technology and we can pull that off. But in the meantime, we will be watching those regardless. Okay. Let us return from our main mission. Dare I ask for an appropriate sound effect? Oh, that was rather unassuming. All right, well, great. It's kind of normal. I'm very pleased. Yeah. And it's time for a Warp Speed Roundtable. So last time around, we asked if you could hop through the Guardian of Forever, what Star Trek universe event would you like to witness firsthand? But this time around, we're bringing back a classic bit here on The Topic is Trek. Here on The Topic is Trek. Thank you.
Right. Why are you shouting the name of this show?
Just kind of give
ready,
me that.
I was ready with another sound effect. Do the thing.
Oh, all right. Well, then give me the appropriate sound effect to start Warp Speed Roundtable.
Fine.
Ouch.
No, these are too appropriate. I don't know. That's anyway. All right. So, of course, we're speaking about shuttle pod or airlock, where we talk about.
There. That's what I'm waiting for.
That's more appropriate. There we go. So we take a character and we say, does this person deserve to be given their own shuttle pod and head off to the bright future that is tomorrow?
Apple shuttle pod. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No,
you shove in your ears and look like cigarette butts.
No. Okay. Or should they be shoved out an airlock? So this time around, I figured in honor of one of the episodes we just talked about. No, I'm not talking about Lieutenant Carver, because obviously he gets a shuttle pod no matter what universe you're in.
Yeah, right.
I'm speaking about Cyrano Jones. That's right.
Friend we are going Kirk. To decide.
Yes. Should we give Cyrano Jones his own shuttle pod, or should he be sent out an airlock?
With a can of beans.
I am going to start with Craig on this one.
Lucky you.
Yeah? Yeah, I am.
All but right. They say in Memory Alpha that he was a licensed asteroid locator, prospector, intergalactic trader, independent scout, and to Captain James T. Kirk, a nuisance who lived in the mid-23rd century. I'm going to say he gets a airlock because he's got all the going for him, but yet we only see him dealing with tribbles. So I don't want any more tribbles. He's out of here.
Nah, not living up to his potential, not living his best life, huh?
True. Yes.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I'm going to also give him the airlock because what we know of him is he's dealing in something that clearly he knows is bad. He just had to go through this whole scenario where, I mean, I can't believe that none of the tribbles reproduced at all for anything before he got here to the K-7 space station. All right, then he has to be working on cleaning that up, and then he somehow finagles his way out of doing that and decides, you know, rather than doing anything else, I'm just going to deal with more with tribbles and do more things with tribbles and steal things involved with tribbles and run from Klingons and say it's like and get the Enterprise in trouble again and maybe get them, you know, captured and stuff. No, airlock for you, sir. You're humble, you're lovable, you're a scamp, and you get the airlock. So,
you Chuck, had no doubt about that one, did you?
No, none at all.
All right. I was weighing
the guy
this
to death,
heavily.
But at the same time, out the door he goes.
I was weighing this heavily because he is a lovable character. Ultimately, I came to the same conclusion. Out he goes because similar reasons.
He goes now.
Whoa.
His launch was not delayed. You're right. Why would you go do the same thing? First, he was, trying to finagle free drinks on Space Station K7.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, what's to like about this guy? And then, you're right. He does the same kind of thing. He gets involved. Craig listed off some of his other quote unquote credits, but where was any of that? There's not much to love.
Yeah, he's the worst lovable guy ever, I guess.
He was an idiot.
What else did that actor play in?
I'm sorry, I kept thinking of Edward from the Star Trek short.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
He was an idiot.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they could be related. They could be cousins. I don't know. This just seems like a good idea. I'm just going to keep doing tribbles. My friend Kirk, it's never going to end well for me. And the Klingons are going to be after me. But, I just can't help myself.
We've never heard of Sherman's planet other than those two episodes.
Right. And they never got their supplies. I mean, they everybody died.
Everybody's twice. Just as they're recovering from the first disaster.
It's like the castle of Monty Python. That one sank and into the swamp. And then the next one, it's like, no, just don't be on that planet anymore. It's no use.
Go build your castle out on Sherman's planet.
Oy. All right. Mm. But if you, dear listener, have counterpoint to that, if you think, no, Cyrano should have a shuttle pod. Well, you let us know, or you can let us know if you agree with us as well, because that is the logical choice to make.
Wait, he comes on board with tribbles that don't reproduce, and he demonstrates the Glommer eating one, so his supply stock is now diminished. What is wrong with this guy? When you don't have more supply coming, you don't destroy what precious you've got.
Yeah, I think Craig was right. He's an idiot.
Stupid.
All right. But on that note, I think it's time to try to refill the dilithium chamber and watch all those little sparky things go up and down. That was the thing I was thinking of in that episode. When that happens, right, they get to the door of the engine room where they have the piece of antimatter. Mm-hmm. And they call to somebody, random name person, to open the door or something like that. It's like, we never saw them. We never knew they were part of this plan to do this thing. Who is that person? And the person opens the door, but we never see that person. What was all that? So it's like, why didn't you, if you're not going to show the person, say, well, go ahead, Spock, open the door, or, Uhura, open the door, or something like that. Call this generic person that you don't, why are they, who is this?
I don't think they had a storyboard for most of these episodes to know how they were going to be put together. Let's just randomly record some lines and see what happens.
We don't have monkeys type at a typewriter, but we do have random lines we're just going to stitch together.
Dorothy's rolling in her grave now.
No kidding.
All right. So we are going to say that I am Clinton from Comedy Forecast, and you can find me at Comedy Forecast, all one word with the number 4.com. There are no tribbles there on the site whatsoever. You can also find me find me on Twitter at Comedy Forecast, on Facebook Comedy Forecast, on Instagram Comedy at Comedy Forecast, where I'm doing right now a morning show called Morning Extinction every morning, where I'm on for about 10 minutes or so, talking about various things, trying out different things to see what works and doesn't work on Instagram Live. And I'm now inspired that I've got to find my tribble. And so I think upcoming episode of Morning Extinction, I will have my tribble on that episode with me. All right, but who speaks for you guys this week?
I'll go ahead. You can find me and Lieutenant Carver over there.
Yeah.
Hanging out at Technorama Podcast.
Walking out the door. Right?
he can ignore him all you want, but he won't go away.
Right.
We do a, Craig and I do Technorama Podcast, if you haven't already heard. I know we have a lot of crossover listeners between these three, but thank you very much. Chuckchat.com is where you can find that. Just search for Technorama Podcast wherever you are on the internet with your favorite search engine or social media, and you will find us there. And let's roll the music.
All right, hit it.
This one.
If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. On behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek, don't
put on the red
shirt.
Carver.
Hey, Clinton, take that tribble out with you.
Toss a coin to your Lieutenant Carver.